So if you could turn back to John chapter 1. Very, very familiar words, possibly some of the most familiar words for us in the whole Bible. But I want you, as we approach it this morning, just to try and imagine reading it for the first time. Try and imagine. Especially imagine that up to verse 13 is all you knew. You didn't know anything beyond verse 13. If that was true, what would you know? Well, you would have been introduced to someone called the Word. And you would have been immediately confronted with this idea that this Word, this person, was in the beginning, eternal, was there already in the beginning. You would have also been confronted with the idea that this Word has a unique relationship with God. The Word was with God. But also the Word was God. So you're confronted with this mystery that there is this with, but also is. The Word was with God, the Word was God. Distinct, yet one. Then we get to seeing that he's a creator. Verse 3, all things made through him, this one person. You're starting to see that he created everything, he sustains everything, but also not just physical life, because we start to read, in him was life. That life is suggesting something more than just existence, more than just existing in this world like many of us do. Eat, drink, sleep, start again. No, this is life, spiritual life, something more. So there's physical life, there's spiritual life. You add it all up, then you start to see he's described as a light. He's shining into the darkness. He's showing us reality in our dark world. Then we see in verse 6 that there are people sent from God to tell us about him. John the Baptist, the last in the list, Old Testament prophets, all telling us, look at him, look at him. Then we start to find out when we get to, say, verse 11, verse 12, that he gives the right to become children of God. So he makes you born again. He gives you the right to spend eternity in heaven with God. Everything weighing on this one person, right? That's the picture we're building up. Now, if you could imagine what they were like, this person, what picture would you have so far? Mysterious, vast, mighty, maybe unknowable. Then we get to verse 14, huge. And this word, the word, became flesh and dwelt among us. So now we're entering a whole new realm here. This same being that I've just described has taken on human flesh. You can now see him. You can speak to him. You can touch him. What picture would you have now? So by that point, a human being now, what would he be like? What would it be like if you met him face to face? Again, John pulls out lots of Old Testament imagery here. So maybe, as a reader, the picture you might have is of his mighty power again, holiness, someone who is hostile against sin, angry at sin. What picture would you have of this person as a human being? Would you want to be in their presence? Would you want to be near them? Would you survive if you met them as a sinner? Well, this is where the second part of verse 14 is so important. And it's something that I want to particularly focus on this morning. Verse 14, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He lived among us. Ideas of grace. But then we continue. And we have seen his glory. Glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. Five words. Full of grace and truth. That is the standout thing that John says stood out. Think about those words. First, he says, we have seen. We. Who's we? In immediate context, 12 disciples. We have seen him, he says. Now, that word seen is very interesting because it's not just kind of like a quick glimpse. It's like a close inspection. So John is saying, we've seen him. Think about it. They were with him for 3 years. We've inspected him. We've looked every day. 3 years. Imagine. Imagine living with someone for 3 years. My mum has lived with me for a lot of my life. She's not going to say I'm full of grace and truth. That's for sure. But John could say he's full of grace and truth. This is the glory, John says. Now, why is he saying grace and truth? Why has he chosen those two things? Well, firstly, in the context, there's clear links to Exodus. So we're not going to have time to go into this today. But if you want in your own time, read Exodus 33 and Exodus 34, what I read in the beginning of this service. There's clear links there to Moses and him wanting to see God's glory. God says, my name is this, he proclaims. And what's found in that passage that I read earlier? Abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. So there's two links there. Moses heard that God is abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Two words that are very similar to grace and truth. So there's a clear link being made. But I want to say this morning that there's more going on here. John is zoning in on these two things, grace and truth, because he wants to draw us in. He wants to draw us in. Why am I saying that? Well, John continues, verse 15. John bore witness about him and cried out, this was he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me. So John is going back to John the Baptist, and he's saying, look, John is speaking about him. Jesus was before John. There's no one like Jesus. Then he goes on, verse 16. He carries on the thought from verse 14. For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. John is sharing this with us this morning to draw you to Jesus, whoever you are this morning. There is a reason why he is telling you about the glory that he saw, and he simplifies it into two words, grace and truth. That's what John wants you to know ultimately about who Jesus is and what he is like. John's purpose is to affect you this morning, to affect how you relate to Jesus this morning. And why am I saying that? Because we know the very purpose of John's gospel is explicitly told to us at the end of John's gospel, which I'm just going to read. You don't have to turn to it. But John makes utterly clear why he's written this book. No doubt. He says, verse 30 of chapter 20, now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written. He's carefully selected them so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. So he's writing this gospel to affect you, the reader, and to make you consider Jesus, but not just consider, to draw you in. That's why he's emphasizing grace and truth. So what I want to do this morning is just to think about the response that we as readers should have today, considering that we have just learned that Jesus is full of grace and truth. What response should you have to that? And I'm going to show you three conclusions that we must draw as readers. That's what we're going to do this morning. The first conclusion I think we must draw is this. Simply three words. I need Jesus. We need Jesus. Why am I saying that? Well, firstly, if you looked around to our world today, if you walked out on the high street, you will never find anyone saying those words. Guaranteed. Unless God is working in their heart. Even us as Christians, I wonder, even this last week, have you walked through your day saying, I need Jesus. I need him. It's desperate. I need him every hour. That hymn, I need you every hour. Do we walk through our week like that? I think that grace and truth are like buzzwords to catch our attention, to make us sit up and take notice. Let me define the two words quickly. Grace. Grace is this idea of God's kindness, particularly undeserved kindness. So imagine someone giving you the best gift you could ever imagine when you've been the worst towards them that you could have possibly been. That gives you some idea of God's grace. It is kindness. It is gentle. It is a smile. It is wrapped in love. There's nothing better than that word grace. That's the first thing. You've seen why it's a buzzword. It should catch your attention. Then the second word, truth. Truth is this idea of revealing something that's hidden. Something that was once hidden that you need to know is hidden, but it's revealed. Truth. Now, we value both of those things in our society today. We do. the average person loves when someone is honest. You love it when people are honest with you. You don't want people to tell you lies. But you also love when people are kind. We value charity. We value helping those who can't help themselves. We value grace and truth in our world. But I want to push it further and say it's not just something we value, it's something we greatly need. Now, if you stopped someone in the street and asked them, what do you need most today? They would not say grace, and they would, I think, probably wouldn't say truth. We live in a post-truth society where your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth. No one's really looking for absolute truth today, we could safely say as well. But think about it for a minute. We need grace. Let me try and paint a picture to try and show you that. Why is it that day to day, every single one of us has a nagging conscience? We carry around shame. We long for someone to accept me, even knowing the worst parts of me. We long for someone to show me some kindness in my daily struggles. We long for a love that is not dependent on me earning it. We long for this. We need grace. We need truth. Think about how lost we are. Think about the identity crisis of our world today. Who am I? What am I doing here? Where am I going? What's beyond death? Is there someone up there? Truth, 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 truth. All truth. We're looking for truth, yet we're running from truth. We need grace. We need truth. Now, why? Well, I think in our opening passage, John has been hinting at that question, why? Think about, he starts in the beginning. In the beginning was the word. What was there in the beginning, in Genesis? You could describe it as a dark, blobby mess. Chaos. Scary. Can't see a thing. John is essentially saying this is our world now, spiritually. That's why we need the light to come. That's why we need the word to come. We need grace and truth. Why is our world like that? Because, as many of you know, we have sinned. We have rejected the light. We have rejected the God of grace and truth. So there's no alternative grace and truth. We've rejected the source. So we're lost. We're in darkness. We're scared. We're heavy. We're guilty. We're heading for judgment and hell. So it's an urgent need, because if you don't receive grace and truth before you die, the grace and truth of God, you will be lost forever in darkness. So this is an urgent need. So what I'm trying to show you as we begin is when we read that Jesus is full of grace and truth, we are supposed to conclude, I need that. I need it. I need to be filled with grace and truth. I need an overflow. That's the first conclusion. I need Jesus. The second conclusion is this. I want Jesus. It's a subtle difference. There's a difference between needing and wanting. And we need both when it comes to Jesus. I don't just need him to be my savior. I should want to be with him. I should want to be near him. This is where it starts to relate maybe more to us as Christians. We're saved. We've got the need sorted. I'm saved. I have my grace and truth. I have it for life. Do you want to be with him? I think that's what comes out here as well. Because we discover his character here. Grace and truth. Full of grace. Full of truth. Remember how beautiful those two words are that I described. Grace and truth. And the question is, don't you want to know someone like that? Who's full of grace and truth? Maybe you're saying, I could take it or leave it. So let's dig a bit deeper to try and see how wonderful that statement is, that he's full of grace and truth. Let's dig deeper. The first thing I want to note is that grace and truth are front and center when it comes to Jesus. Remember what I said earlier. John has inspected Jesus as the beloved disciple, by the way. He got a unique angle that no one else did. Perfect example of that is in John 13. He is lying on the chest of Jesus. He got to see Jesus closer than anyone else. And it's John who says that Jesus is full of grace and truth. We can trust his assessment, surely. Now, again, normally when we describe someone or think of someone, we don't spend a whole page or paragraph saying what they're like. We summarize them. We maybe choose the two things that jump out. So if my mum was to describe me, I'd shudder to think what she would say in two words. But maybe some of you might say he's cool, funny. I'm not sure. But no one would say that Joe, as I said earlier, is full of grace and truth. Maybe not even a scrap of grace and truth. But Jesus, John says, is full of grace and truth. Now let's dig a bit deeper again. Note that grace comes first in the list. I had to ponder this as I was preparing this week. Why grace first? That's what I was questioning. If I was to think of what would come first out of those two, I would pick truth. Because I'm thinking, if the words become in flesh and come into our world, he's going to have to sort us out before grace comes. He's going to have to tell us the truth. You're a sinner. Repent and believe, and then you'll get grace. But the first thing you see in the list is grace. Grace and truth. I'm not saying it comes without, there's both together, but grace comes first. What I love is about what that's telling us is, read verse 16. John zones in on grace, for from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. It's like John is zoning in, and he's basically telling us, if you meet Jesus, if you come to Jesus this morning, if you come afresh, what's the first contact you're going to have with him? What's the thing that's going to jump out first if you were to approach Jesus? Think about a person you've wronged and you were trying to make things right. What's the first thing you probably get? A bit of a scowl? A bit of, oh, I suppose I'll forgive you. With Jesus, grace comes flooding out as the first point of contact before anything else. Grace. And that should make sense, because after everything John has said in this paragraph that we've read, this passage, grace jumps out. Think about the incarnation. He left heaven, his palace, to take on human flesh and dwell among us. His very act of coming to us, grace screams out. Before he even says a word in John's gospel, before he even does a miracle, the first thing that jumps out is grace. He's here. He's living among us. The Word, the eternal being, chose to live among us. And you think about the world that we are, hostile. It says he came to his own and they did not receive him. Yet he still came. He knew that. He still came. He knew that you, for however many years of your life, would reject him. My mum became a Christian when she was 70. She rejected him for 70 years of her life, and he came in grace. I rejected him for 23 years of my life. He still came grace first. And for you this morning, you might be someone, maybe a Christian, who has stayed away for a long, long time because you've forgotten that grace is the first point of contact with Jesus. You might have never come to Jesus because you haven't realized that grace is the first thing you will receive if you come in faith. So grace first. Note another thing. Jesus is full of both grace and truth. Now, why am I emphasizing that? Because I think many people today would say, wait a minute, there's much grace in this world. There's much truth. People are kind. People are genuinely honest. We're not lying all the time, are we? We're fairly honest people. But John's point here in verse 14 is that Jesus is unique. Let's read it again, verse 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Here's the bit. Glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. So he's saying Jesus is utterly unique. He is the only Son from the Father. There is no one like him. And in that context, he says, full of grace and truth. Are you seeing it? John is saying there is no one like Jesus. There is no one full of grace and truth like Jesus. Let me give you some examples to try and picture that. So imagine you went out on a search in this world and you were like, I'm going to find some kindness. I'm going to find some truth. What would you find outside of Jesus? I would argue, firstly, you would find a diluted version of grace and truth. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, You'll get some kindness, I'm sure, but it will be kindness mixed with payback. You might get some nice, genuine, lovely favours, but maybe some ulterior motives lacking behind it, something for themselves as they helped you. You might get smiles to your face, friendliness. Oh, what a friendly world. But behind your back, what do they say? Or maybe you'll look into religion. What will you find in religion generally? You'll get some grace offered. Muslims will say, Allah is merciful. He's merciful. He can forgive. Oh, but you've got to meet halfway. You've got to do something. You've got to do this, this, this. And then maybe grace might meet you halfway. Diluted grace mixed with something else. Diluted truth. You'll get some glimmers of truth mixed in with a whole load of lies. That's the best you'll find. But remember, Jesus is full of grace and truth. How is that wonderful? He's so full of grace and truth that there is no room for dilution. That means when he says he will do something, he will do it. There's no lies in Jesus. If he's going to show you kindness, you will get no harshness, no unnecessary cruelty in that kindness. It's an undiluted fullness of grace and truth. You don't need to worry about any small print. You don't need to worry about any hidden motives. He's full of grace and truth. Another example, you look out in your world, you go on your search for grace and truth. What will you find? I would argue you'll find also scraps of grace and truth. You'll find some. I'll give you some examples. Maybe you've heard of the expression common grace. It gives this idea of the common grace that you find in this world to all people. Many examples for us today. Food on your table, job, family. That's grace. That's grace from God. You didn't deserve that. You have life. You're breathing right now. That's grace. You didn't deserve breath. So there is grace. There's truth. At a very basic level, the Bible says every person who walks this earth knows that there is a creator. They know it. The atheist might deny it. They might suppress it. But we know it. So at the very basic level, we know there's a God. That's true. At the very basic level, we know we've not lived as we should have done. We've got a conscience. But it scraps. It's not enough. It's not enough for you to know those things. That's not going to help you in eternity. That's not going to bring you to where you need to be in terms of knowing my maker. So it scraps. But again, hear the verse. Jesus is full of grace and truth. That is telling you this. There is more than enough grace for you this morning. It doesn't matter what you've done, how many times you've done it, how long it's been. There is more than enough grace. Because John says, out of his fullness, we have received grace in place of grace. That means a continuous flow. There's more than enough truth for you this morning. Do you want to know more of God, Christian? Do you want to go further in? Jesus is full of truth. Seek him. Do you want to know who you really are? What you're doing here? Jesus is full of truth. Ask him. Seek him. Jesus is full of grace and truth. But finally, in your search in the world for grace and truth, this is what you'll often find as well. One or the other. Never both together. Never grace and truth at the same time. What do I mean by that? Well, I'll just give two brief examples. Think about our culture today. Woke society. We're waiting for that wokeism talk, I'm sure. Grace without truth is what you'll find. So they will give grace. They will offer grace. They'll speak much of kindness, but at the expense of truth. You have to throw out truth for that to work. Or, other way around, truth without grace. We see that in John's gospel, the Pharisees, all about truth, but we're going to cast out any outcast with no grace whatsoever. Think about our culture today. We've taken it another level. The Pharisees were casting out. We cancel. You don't even exist. If you make one foot wrong, you are gone. You are not even existing. It's a step further than the Pharisees. This is our culture. In the pursuit of grace and truth, we have to throw out one or the other. We never have both together, but we need both together. Why? Well, let me give you a quick illustration. Imagine there's a man who has wrecked his life. He has been terrible to his family. He's addicted to many things that are harming him and slowly killing him. If I went in and only showed grace and said, don't worry, mate, you're doing fine. I know it's hard, but just keep doing what you're doing. Be who you are. Grace, kindness. Is that going to help him? No. If I only went in with truth and went in, you're an idiot. What are you doing? Sort yourself out. Is that going to help him? No. We need grace and truth together. We're in a state in our world like that man. That man could picture all of us in God's eyes. But we need grace and truth together, not one or the other. Remember, Jesus is full of both. His grace is truthful. He'll be honest. But his truth is gracious. Even when he has to tell you hard things, which he does, it will be wrapped in grace. Truth wrapped in grace. It might hurt, but it's wrapped in grace. It's for your good. This is Jesus. This is Jesus. Look no further. Look no further. So we want him, surely. Surely you want to know someone like that. Surely you want to be near someone like that. But for our final conclusion, we've looked at two. Needing Jesus, wanting Jesus. It's one thing to see your need for Jesus. It's another thing to see your want for him. If you desire him, great. But it's another thing to actually receive Jesus. This is where it gets very personal and important, because many see their need but don't receive. Many see their want but don't receive. So a final conclusion that we must draw from learning this amazing thing about Jesus, full of grace and truth, is I must receive him. Nothing less will do. Remember, those words, full of grace and truth, should be like magnets. They are supposed to draw you to Jesus. He's the attractive one. We just need to see it. The reason why we don't come to him is because we don't see him for who he is. Well, John's saying, look, I'm telling you, he's full of grace and truth. We need to receive. And I do think that's John's purpose here, because remember I read to you verse 16, for from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. That's what he's emphasizing. It's not good enough to just know that Jesus is full of grace and truth. You have to receive it. You have to take it. You have to ask for it. What is it to receive? Well, thankfully it rhymes with believe. They do correlate. To receive Jesus is to believe and come in faith. Now, why is that so important? Because it's the very moment where grace will transfer from him to you. Where you're not just looking at someone who's full of grace and truth, you're tasting it. You're seeing the truth. You're filled with grace and love. That's what happens when someone becomes a Christian. They've tasted and they've seen. Now, to show this, John gives many examples in his gospel of people that meet with this man who is full of grace and truth and are changed forever. Many examples. Interestingly, John doesn't use that word grace again in his whole gospel after verse 16. It's almost like he's saying, I don't need to mention it anymore. Just look at him in action. Look at how he lives his life. Look at what he does, the miracles, the gentleness. Look at the grace on show. So I'm going to give two examples now of two people who met with this man. And I've selected them carefully. I could have picked 10. I've chosen two. And there's a reason why I've chosen these two. So the first example is a well-known one, probably the most well-known. Woman at the well. The woman at the well. John 4. Now, you don't have to turn to it, but I'll just try and give you an idea of what happened in this account. So firstly, to get your head around how amazing this is, just I want to introduce to you this woman. This woman was someone who was an outcast in society. So we know that from the fact that she was a woman. Sadly, women were not treated well in that society. A Samaritan, she was hated by the Jews. And she was a big sinner in terms of an obvious sinner, because she had been with five men who were her husband, from husband to husband to husband. And then now she's not with the sixth man. She's not married, but she's with him. So in this society, that would be quite shocking. Imagine in that society. This is the person we're meeting. She needs grace and truth. She needs grace. She's messed up. She needs truth because she's lost. She's searching from man to man to man, looking for something. Grace and truth. I wonder if that's you. She wasn't a Christian at this point. Maybe. She was familiar, by the way, with many things in the religion, but she wasn't a believer. Maybe that's you this morning. Maybe you're so familiar with these things that you're hearing, but yet you haven't received grace, you haven't received truth, and it shows in your life. You're searching from this to this to this, and you feel down in the pecking order. I'm not the Christian type. Jesus wouldn't take a second look at me. Well, let's consider what happens. First of all, we read that he had to pass through Samaria, the first sign of grace, verse 4. He had to be there. Why? Because she was there. Grace. Grace. He then speaks to her, and she's shocked. Why are you, a Jew, speaking to a woman like me of Samaria? He opens the conversation. He initiates grace. But then he shares truth that you would never have heard otherwise. I mean, we've never heard anything like this. He said to her, if you drink of that water in this well, you'll be thirsty again. But the water that I will give you will become in you a spring of water welling up to eternal life. He's basically saying, I can give you deep soul thirst quenching water. When would anyone ever say that? He's revealing hidden truth that was never heard before in that way. And she hears it from his lips. Truth. But then the truth gets uncomfortable because he starts to expose her. He knows exactly her life. She didn't tell him. I know you've had 5 husbands, he says, and the man you're with now is not your husband. Exposing truth, but it's wrapped in grace. There's no condemnation. He's offering her living water, knowing that she's like that. Are you seeing the point here? Grace and truth are working together beautifully on show here. And the result, she leaves her water jar. She runs into the town. She tells everyone. She's overflowing. She's received the grace and truth from Christ, and she overflows. It's beautiful. So maybe this morning, if you are in her position in some way, shape, or form, Jesus is here this morning by his Spirit. I can say that on the account of this book, that when his people meet together, Jesus is there among us. So you can call out to him this morning and say, I want your grace and truth. I need it. Confess. Own up. Let him see into your heart. Don't hide up anymore. She had to be exposed. Let him give you the hard truth, but it's covered in grace. He comes in grace. His first contact with you is grace. Second example, though, believers are in view here, particularly. Why? Because I think John's particular focus is here in verse 16 of chapter 1. For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. We, disciples, grace upon grace. It's not a one-time thing. It's a continuous thing. Fresh grace, grace upon grace, grace in place of grace. That's what we need. Because every day we need fresh grace. I've messed up today already. I've thought things I shouldn't have thought. I've said things I shouldn't have said. I need fresh grace. How long has it been since you've come and received fresh grace from the Lord? Have you settled for that first amount? The salvation amount? Have you not sought him for it regularly? Have you not sought for more truth? Well, we need to look at Peter. I love that John ends his gospel here. Chapter 21. It's a strange ending to the gospel. Chapter 20 sounds like the perfect ending, and then we get an extra chapter. Jesus revealed himself again, John says. He's given a zoom in on Peter. Now, why Peter? Well, see if you can relate to him. Let me introduce Peter. Peter was one of the closest disciples. He was bold. He proclaimed truth wonderfully. He understood things maybe sometimes when the other disciples didn't. He was faithful until one moment where it all came crashing down. And he was warned in advance, and yet he denied his Savior 3 times. He lied. I don't know him, he said. I don't know Jesus. He turned from the truth to lies. He turned from grace a place of guilt. He lost it, in that sense, you could say. He lost that fresh grace and truth that we found. Is that you? Has there been one moment where you've almost thrown it all away? Or has it been a slow slide away from God? Well, observe what happens here, just very briefly, as we're winding things up. Jesus appears to Peter, grace. Jesus says, children. He's basically saying, lads, grace. Jesus feeds Peter first, grace. But then Jesus has some hard truth. Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Charcoal fire, memories of his fall. Truth, hard truth, but again, wrapped in grace. Because he doesn't say, what, how dare you? He says, go and serve me again. Peter isn't just left in the back of the queue as a kind of low-rate Christian. He's brought back to the front of the queue to serve. And what's the result of this meeting with Jesus where he finds fresh grace and truth? Pentecost. Bold preaching. Peter suddenly filled with grace and truth. Are you seeing the link between the woman at the well and Peter? They receive it, they run and tell. It's the most natural thing. So finally, how? How is any of this possible? The climax of grace and truth, the cross. We have to end there. This is where the cross of Jesus Christ is where you see grace at its highest, truth at its brightest. Why? Because he's full of grace. He's the Son of God who came to earth, who took on human flesh, and his flesh is pierced. The Word became flesh, but then the Word was pierced for me, for my sins, for my guilt. He takes my place. Grace. He says it is finished. Nothing left to pay. That's why, Peter, you can go and preach in Pentecost. That's why, woman at the well, you can be completely cleansed. But then there's truth at the cross because you see, whoa, that's how bad my sin was. That's how serious it is to God. That's who God is, though. He's taken it instead of me. I learn all of that by looking at the cross. The real truth about myself, the real truth about my sin, the real truth about God. And this is where we receive it, by the way, because he was pierced at the cross and blood and water come out the side. You could say the blood is grace, the water is truth. I think it's in that hymn, Rock of Ages, double cure, cleanse me from its guilt and power. You're cleansed from the guilt of sin, grace, but also the power of sin, washing. I'm walking in truth now, truth. You find it at the cross. So the call this morning is there is truth and grace and truth available this morning because Jesus rose. He's alive today. You can call on him today. He comes to meet you today. And the final question to ask is, will you receive it? Will you receive it? Otherwise, everything I've just said has been in vain. If you leave this place with simply the knowledge that Jesus was full of grace and truth, yet you haven't tasted it, nothing will change. You will still leave this place as a non-Christian who's heading for hell, no grace, no truth, lost forever. Or you will leave this place maybe as a miserable Christian again. Nothing's changed this morning. Same mediocre Christian life, going through empty, just about scraping by. I'll come next Sunday, see what happens. No, receive the grace and truth now. He is here. Your first contact will be grace. Nothing should keep you away. Nothing should. How do you come? How do you receive? Repent and believe. Turn away from the lies, receive truth. Turn away from your guilt, receive grace. That's what it is. And trust him. Trust him. Take him at his word. He's full of grace and truth. He won't let you down. How could we stay away from such a person as Jesus Christ?